So one of the really fun things I remember about my dad was that he was a really good card player. He could take a nothing hand. People would joke about it. He could have absolutely nothing and somehow come out smelling like a rose. He could take the cards and just make it work somehow. He was in the Navy, spent a lot of time on the ship. They played a lot of pinochle, so he came out of the Navy and he just kind of had a reputation for being a good card player, whether it was pinochle or poker. Because being a good card player, it's not about necessarily that you're going to get dealt a good hand. You're going to get dealt lots of bad hands, but you kind of have to know what to do when you get a bad hand. And there's a famous quote from a guy named Randy Pausch, and he says, "We cannot change the cards we are dealt, just how we play the hand." And it just so happens, I was looking up this guy, Randy Pausch. I don't know what made me think of him. I think I was thinking about people that were dying and like their last words. And that was this man's situation. He was a professor at Carnegie Mellon University. And he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. He was only 47. He had a wife, and his kids were like ages 1, 2, and 5, just three small kids. And they gave him just a few months to live. And so he wanted to make a book for his wife and kids, and it ended up to be for many, many people. He co-authored this book called The Last Lecture. It sold like 5 million copies. He made a YouTube when he was doing his last lecture to the Carnegie Mellon senior class, and it was just viewed by millions of Americans. It was enormously inspiring, and it's well worth your time if you haven't seen it. And today is the day that he passed away, July 25th, in 2008. And I remember reading the book. The part that I really liked, it just made me so sad. He was talking to his girls, his daughters, when he knew that he wasn't going to be there when they were dating and choosing a marriage partner, and he was giving them advice about men, and so it was very, very good. Some of the other things he said was, brick walls are there for a reason. The brick walls are not there to keep us out. The brick walls are there to give us a chance to show how badly we want something. The brick walls are there to stop the people who don't want it badly enough. They are there to stop the other people. So he just had so many neat, inspiring things to share. And the book that he co-authored, it was on the New York Times bestseller for like 112 weeks. It was like a global phenomenon. And so I was thinking about, the card that he got dealt. Nobody would want to get that card of having pancreatic cancer when you're, 47 years old and have a wife and three small kids. But he was such an example to everybody of, I can't imagine anyone playing that hand better than the way he played it. I mean, he lived a vibrant life to the very end, and his comments, they were very wise for a 47-year-old. So, another person that I think of when I think of these words that are spoken on the deathbed, the last words is, I remember reading about Marie Osmond when she lost all her weight, and her story was that her mother was on her deathbed, and her mother said, "Marie, you really got to lose the weight." And after her mother passed away, she was inspired. She lost 50 pounds. And I have a friend here that she told me that her husband just lost 50 pounds. And I was like, "Oh, really? Well, how do you do it?" And she said the same thing. She said his mother was about to pass away, and his mother called him in and said, "You know what? You really need to lose the weight. You're too fat." She was really blunt. It was a funny story. And she also said she was going to leave him some money and that he needed to fix up the house for his wife. So after his mother passed away, sure enough, he lost the 50 pounds and he fixed up the house real nice for his wife. And so, you know, the Torah tells us that that it's okay to rebuke a friend, but it says you shall rebuke your neighbor, but not to do a sin in the process. Like, rebuke is fine, but not if the effect is going to be negative. If the other person is going to get defensive or angry or not going to accept the criticism, then it's better left unsaid. So we have Moses is getting ready to die. We're reading in the Torah, the five books of Moses, and the very last book of Moses, he takes about 30 some days and he gives like a farewell speech. And so I thought that was interesting that, you know, of the five books of the Torah, one of the books, like one-fifth of the Torah is a farewell speech, is a deathbed speech of Moses' last words before he dies. But they say that it's a good time actually to do, if you have to do a rebuke, it's not going to be seen like nagging, because, you know, these are your final days. People are usually pretty selective about their words, and so it's seen as, you know, like, wow, you know, this person really cares about me. This is the last thing that they want to say to me, and so it's not going to be taken in a negative way like it may at another time. And so it says that that you can save people embarrassment of having to face you in the future because you're not going to be there. So they don't need to feel the need to get defensive or rebel. Like, say, you know, "I'll show her, or I'll show him," because, like, again, you're not going to be there. So dying words are important to hear, and especially, you know, people can receive them if they feel that you have their best interest at heart. And so this is what's happening right now. Moses is about to die, and this is what we're reading about in the Torah. And so he spends the last 30 some days of his life just kind of doing, like, his going over everything, kind of rebuking, making sure that they're, you know, get that last bit of wisdom that he wants to impart to them before he passes. And one of the things that they were having a hard time with was this going into the promised land. They're about to go in, and these people had been really taken care of in the desert, and life was going to change. Now they were going to have to go, and they weren't going to get this manna from heaven. They weren't going to get water from the rock. They were going to go in, and they were going to have to work the land, and they were going to have to fight their enemies. And there's one story in the book of Genesis where there's Abraham and his nephew Lot, and they both can't live in the same place. And Abraham tells Lot, "Okay, you go first. You pick the land that you want." And Lot just looks out over everything, and he picks the well-watered plains, you know, the flatlands. And if you ask any farmer, you know, what kind of land they would prefer, they're certainly going to choose a flatland that has like a natural irrigation all year long. And that's what it was like in Egypt. It had the Nile River. It was flatland. And so when they saw that the land that God was going to give them, they saw that it was going to take a lot more work, because in Israel, in this promised land, there's a lot of mountains. It's beautiful. It's very scenic. There's mountains and there's deserts, but it takes a lot of work. It's not the kind of land that a farmer would choose. And so Moses was telling them in the last days of his life, you know, not to complain and not to think that God should have given them something different than what he gave them, and that they didn't seem to appreciate how much how things were being set up and what the plan was. Because it says that that the eyes of God, and this is the land on which the Lord your God always keeps his eyes from year's beginning to year's end. And so the land of Israel is like a supernatural land. It's a land of divine providence. And divine providence is this concept that everything is specifically guided and determined by God. Whether, he set up a system where when they obeyed him, they would be blessed with fertility and abundance and rainfall. And then when they didn't, the land would just, it would just go to the lowest degree of destitution. So it's not like any other place. Another thing about the location of Israel is, if you look at the map, it's like right there where three continents come together. So it's not the kind of place where you kind of just live a quiet little life and do your thing. It's like a place where all eyes are always on Israel. It's like just the way it is. It's right there where most of the time, like all the world superpowers, they want to control this land. Like it's just the gateway into three continents. And so so this is not what the people thought. Right from the beginning, they were going to have to deal with working hard for everything they got. They were going to always have to deal with fighting off enemies, and everything was going to be done in a supernatural way because God wanted it that way. He wanted to have a connection with the people. He wanted them to have rules and boundaries and to follow the rules, and if they did, they would be blessed, and if not, then they would be punished. And that was his way of teaching them, parenting them. And so, of course, like kids, they that's not what they would have chose. They wanted a lot easier life. And so I was reading something interesting that we've come so far in the world that there's actually wealthy people actually worry now about giving their kids too much, actually destroying their kids, or handing, if their kids have it too easy, life is handed on a silver platter, they don't learn responsibility, they don't learn how to appreciate things. And so, like, God knew what was best for us. I mean, the best thing is that you don't just get, things plopped in your lap, that you make an effort, that you're actively involved in working, strong work ethic, providing for yourself, and just usually you gain a lot of knowledge when you're going through a process of earning your wealth, and instead of just, having it land in your lap. There's just a world of difference between, that and enjoying the fruits of your labor, being challenged, having, being proud of your achievements, appreciating what you have. And there's something he says, if you don't watch out, you can set up a situation where a child never has the pleasure of bringing home a paycheck. And so, 100 years ago, people didn't worry about that. I mean, everybody worked really, really hard. And here's a fun side note. It says, if you lived 100 years ago with the lifestyle that you have today, you would be considered the richest person on the planet. So Randy Posh, he was saying this thing about, you can't change the cards that you're dealt, just how you play the hand. And he also has a lot of other neat things. He says one of them is experience is what you get when you didn't get what you wanted. And experience is often the most valuable thing you have to offer. He says, show gratitude, don't complain, just work harder, never give up. And so I thought, wow, you know, just so happened that I looked him up and I found out, you know, this is the day of his death 9 years ago. And I wanted to talk about Moses, our teacher. We call him Moses Rabbeinu. Rabbeinu means our teacher. Moses Rabbeinu is about to pass away, and he has so many things that he wants to make sure that he gets across, out of love for his people. And so I just thought it kind of all went together, of the last words of people that love us and that we love them. And so that's just the message of the moment. Till next time. Bye for now. Shalom.